The Wall Street Journal said he's one of the most innovative minds in football.
He's a rat.
ESPN once called him the guru of the spread.
Scumbag.
Football Scoop labeled him the mastermind behind college football's number one offense.
Nobody likes him, not even his family.
He took three separate teams over a five-year period and made each a top-10 offense.
Yeah, but he's such a horse's ass. He was fired by future United States Senator Tommy Tuberville in the middle of the season, even though he had a 5-2 record.
No wonder CBS Sports said there's never been quite a coach like Franklin. He marches to a different beat.
Pariah, an outcast, a person or animal that is despised, shunned, or avoided. Warning, buckle up and put your big boy pants on. This isn't your friendly kiss-ass coach's show. If you can't handle the truth, eject immediately.
And now, from parts unknown, it's the Pigskin Pariah. The one, the only, Coach Tony Franklin.
Thursday night, December the 2nd, 7:08 p.m. Biggest game of the season comes up to decide, in all honesty, probably who the national champion is going to be. And that is the SEC championship game between Alabama and Georgia on Saturday. So we're going to spend the entire podcast on deep diving, breaking down these two teams. I saw every single game, was able not to see it on television, but to see it in the best way, which is with college film, just as if I were coaching, with all the same analytics and breakdowns that all the college coaches are able to look at, they're able to get. For me to be able to see each play, rewind, go back, look at it again, find mismatches, find schemes, who's got the best ideas, who's got the best talent, who's calling the best ball games, all of those things, in order to try to find a way to give you some information that's a little bit unique and a little bit different rather than just, I think so-and-so is going to win because. So this is what I have found. I want to start with statistics that matter. There's an old saying in football that statistics are for losers, and there is a truth to that. If you finish every game and the most important thing that you're concerned about as a coach is how many yards did we throw for? Oh, wow, we threw for 400 yards. We still lost 50-12, but we threw for 400. I feel pretty good. Then, you know, that kind of makes you a loser right there. You want to look at the statistics that actually might make a difference in whether or not you win or lose the game. So I want to look at those right now that actually might play a difference as I went down and I analyzed each one of these. I was a little surprised in the dramatic difference in punting because there's almost a 10-yard difference between the two teams. And I'm really shocked that Alabama is as rated as low as they are in the punting game. So obviously they have a problem there as they're averaging right at 37. Georgia at 46. 9 yards, if there's 8 punts in the game, 72 yards difference, that's flipping the field one time can be the difference in a ball game if you punt that many times. The other statistic that really just kind of blew me away completely, Georgia good with penalties. They're only averaging 37 yards a game in penalties, which makes them 8th in the nation out of 130 schools. So that's really good. Normally that means that they're playing with a tremendous amount of discipline. So it means that the kids have bought in, the players have bought in. Alabama, on the other hand, for all of those that would suggest that Alabama's a homer and that they get all the breaks, not this year. Alabama is 118th in the nation in penalties, giving up 69 yards per game. So almost twice as good is Georgia in discipline on the field on game day over Alabama. That is a dramatic difference that could make a difference in the game. When you take those two stats of punting and penalties, you're talking about the difference in one touchdown, one length of the field in a ball game total. When you look at turnover margin, it's basically the same, so it doesn't make any difference going into this game. They're about equal. When you look at sacking the quarterback, they're both awesome. They're both in the top five in the nation with hardly any difference. Alabama actually being a little bit ahead of Georgia. But here's where there's a dramatic difference is when you flip it and you go to sacks allowed, Georgia is incredible with sacks allowed right now. Number two in the nation. Number two with only 8 sacks allowed the entire season. That is mind-blowing. However, I see Georgia giving up lots of pressures. But what I also see is Stetson Bennett doing an incredible job of avoiding the pressures and getting rid of the ball and not taking big sacks. Can he do that against Alabama, who is great at rushing the passer? Well, we're going to see. But so far this season, when he feels like he's going to give up a 10-yard loss, he gets rid of the football. He finds a way to get rid of the ball. Alabama, on the other hand, is 108th in the nation, giving up 35 sacks, and that's with Bryce Young, who is really good at avoiding pressure. So there's two things that I want you to be aware of, and this is really important. Alabama is good in the RPO game when the quarterback throws it. For whatever reason, the last few weeks, he has not thrown the RPOs that were there. Against Auburn, if he had thrown all the RPOs that Bill O'Brien had called that were wide open, that were easy, and I always tell a quarterback, this is how I coached a quarterback in the RPO game. I told him, if I call an RPO, a run-pass option, meaning it's a run play with a pass attached to it, if it's easy, easy means that you could get 5 to 6 yards no matter what, always throw it no matter the down and distance. Doesn't make any difference. Throw the ball. In the game against Auburn, Bryce Young, for whatever reason, did not throw the ball in the RPO game when he had easy stuff. If he throws the easy stuff against Georgia, they'll be able to keep some drives away for this reason. Georgia will play press on the outside against the outside receivers, but they'll play soft, just like Alabama does, on the inside receivers most of the time, giving themselves as much as 7 to 8 yards of depth. Georgia will also play outside leverage, giving them an easy RPO on a 3-step slant in the run game, or simply throw a fast screen to the slot and see if the Georgia nickel can make the tackle. Georgia throws a few RPOs, but not as many as Alabama. And it's the same thing. Alabama plays soft on the slots. They play off usually at 7 or 8 yards if they're in man coverage. There are lots of easy throws to those guys as well. But Georgia hasn't lived off the RPOs as much. They've thrown them some, but not as much as Alabama. Alabama, if Bryce Young will throw the RPOs when they're there, if he'll take the easy throws every time and not miss one, it gives them a much better chance in this ball game. Third down conversions, both teams are incredibly good. Georgia is 18th in the nation at 46%. Alabama is number 2 in the nation at 54%. For all of those of you who give Bill O'Brien a hard time and say he's a terrible offensive coordinator, you want him to go away, you all are smoking the wrong type of pipe. He is really good. I have one problem and one problem only with him. He's not the problem for the run game. The Alabama run game is bad because the Alabama offensive line is just not very good. So they've got a problem there, and they've got a problem in pass protection. Alabama's quarterback does a great job of buying time, avoiding the rush, and they're still in the bottom of the nation in giving up sacks allowed. But in the third down conversion game, Bill O'Brien is as good as anybody in college football. He's incredible. But what they have to do in this game, they cannot get in third and long. If they get in third and 7, 8, 9, and he's trying to throw their three-man route combinations that are all taking place 18, 20 yards downfield, they'll never get a ball off. They've got to throw quick RPOs. They've got to throw quick screens. They've got to throw some jailbreak screens, which they haven't thrown much of the entire season. And they have to throw some drop-back quick game, which they haven't done much of either. Those are things that they can do and must do. When you think about it, they're going into the game supposedly with only one scholarship running back. We'll talk about that in a second. I have some solutions for that, and I know that those guys would have figured those out. Offensive points per game, well, let's go back to third downs. Third downs conversion allowed, they are both as good as there is in college football. They both give up around 31 and 32%. So that is really good on third down conversion defense. So that's the same. Defensive points and offensive points. Offense, they're almost identical, 40 and 42. Georgia 40, Alabama 42. You can't compare points because they don't play all the same people. They're both good on offense. They both score points. Defensively, however you can. Georgia only giving up 7 points a game. Alabama giving up around 20 points a game. 2-touchdown difference. That is huge. That is dramatic. The fact that the point spread is only 6.5 points basically shows, well, first of all, when you look at the computer, is that it's about a 6-point spread on the computer. I think the computer's wrong. I think the spread, if the name wasn't Alabama, if it was just the coaches and just the team and it wasn't the name, I think the spread would be closer to 12. But it is what it is. It's 6.5 points right now. But here is the other thing, is that when you look at the yards per play, on offense, 7 yards per play, which is more important than total yards in a game. Georgia is at 7 yards per play. Alabama is 6.6. It's not much of a difference between the two. You know, it's a little bit, makes a little bit of difference, but not a great difference. But here is where there is a dramatic difference, is when you look at the rushing yards per play. Georgia, 5.4 rushing yards per play that they get. Alabama, 4 yards per rush. Yard and a half difference in that is huge, gigantic, huge. So huge advantage for Alabama. Then the rush defense for both teams is phenomenal. Alabama even better than Georgia, 2.42, Georgia 2.49. So they're basically about the same. But here's where there's another dramatic difference. Pass defense. And again, it's not the yards you give up. It's the yards per attempt that are important. Alabama gives up 7 yards per attempt. Makes them just average. Makes them just average to a little below average. Georgia, on the other hand, gives up 4.9 yards per pass attempt, which is unbelievable, phenomenal. Best in the nation by far. So when you compare all the stats, there's some things that are even. But there's some dramatic differences when you look at some of those things that I just mentioned. So all those stats are important to keep up with when you're looking at the game. Let's look at some other things. Without throwing names out left and right, we're just going to compare positions. Let's start with running backs. When you look at the running back stats, Alabama's got a running back that's in the top 50 or 60 or 70 in the nation, but he's only averaging 4.9 yards, and he's probably not going to play. Or if he does play, he's going to be limited, and he looked limited the other day. He honestly hasn't looked the same the second half of the season as he did the first half of the season. Georgia doesn't have a running back in the top 100 rushers in the country. but they both run the football around the same amount of times per game, around 40 times per game. But Georgia spreads the runs out more throughout their backfield, and they average more yards per carry. So in the running back game, with Alabama having their best running back hampered, Georgia not having a flash, phenomenal, unbelievable, first round for sure draft pick guy like they've had in years gone by, but they are very good and solid. For this game, I will give Georgia the advantage at running back when comparing the running backs. Offensive line, you just look at the sacks given up and you look at the yards per rush. Offensive line advantage is a big advantage to Georgia. And that doesn't mean that Georgia does not have weaknesses, because I've seen Georgia struggle with giving up blitzes where there's guys untouched. The difference is Stetson Bennett knows his defense will get a stop, and he knows to get rid of the ball, and he's damn shifty. He can make guys miss. He's faster than you think he is, and he can make plays. Alabama, on the other hand, Bryce Young does a good job as well of making plays and making people miss, but Alabama is much worse in the protection and in the run game. So the offensive line advantage goes to Georgia. The wide receiver advantage, Georgia's got good receivers that make plays. Alabama has two what I consider to be great receivers. One of them picked higher than the other one, and I like the second receiver better than I do the first receiver, who I believe has made more plays this year. And that's going to be the key to the game. Can Alabama's receivers catch a ball in space? Because sometimes Georgia will play zone or soft man. Can they catch a ball in space and do what other people have not been able to do? Other people have not been able to catch a ball in space and take it to the house against Georgia. Georgia is phenomenal at tackling in space. Why? Do they have some special drill that they do that's different or unique? They'll be at clinics talking about it all throughout January and February, and high school coaches will be taking their notes. Yeah, they do a good job. So does most everybody else. What they got is the best players in the world playing on defense. The best. And they are phenomenal open space tacklers. Phenomenal. Alabama's receivers are really good in space making people miss. If Alabama's receivers can have three big plays in this game where they make Georgia guys miss in space and turn them into big plays, touchdowns, then Alabama's going to have a chance to win the game. And if they do, they'll literally be the first team this year that has been able to do that. But I believe the advantage in wide receivers goes to Alabama. Tight ends, I believe Bama's tight ends are good. Georgia obviously has the freshman that's played a hell of a season. I believe personally that it's an even match. I believe Bama can match up with the tight ends. Quarterback, Bryce Young is probably going to win the Heisman Trophy as the best player in all of college football. He is special. Incredibly special. Stetson Bennett is special. For all of these radio, television experts, draft experts, who all season long have put Stetson Bennett down and said, well, when they get the other quarterback back, you know, Georgia will really be good. He's okay. He can, you know, make sure he doesn't lose the game. Stetson Bennett has won games by making plays, keeping plays alive, keeping the lead, preventing a sack, making sure that they could punt them deep in their own territory where the defense could then make a play. Stetson Bennett is not a game management quarterback. He can do that, and he will do that when he needs to. The number one job, if you have a phenomenal defense, is don't turn the ball over. If you've got a phenomenal defense, don't turn the ball over. Just make plays. That's what you do if you've got a phenomenal defense. And he's made plays without many turnovers. He's had a couple of dumb ones. But so does every quarterback in the history of football. They all do, somewhere along the way in their life. Hell, I know. I coached a quarterback that still today holds the NCAA record. 444 passes in a row without an interception, a record that may not ever be broken. But on the 10th game of the season, or the 11th game of the season, he threw a couple of picks. It happens to everybody. Every quarterback is going to make a mistake somewhere along the way. They all do. But Stetson Bennett has done a good job. Bryce Young does a really good job of taking care of the ball. The one thing that I said from the beginning of the year that I still am concerned about is Bryce Young holding the ball down so low, and the fact that Alabama is going to get pressure on him. They're going to get back there. They're going to be around Stetson Bennett, rather. I'm sorry. Georgia is going to be around Bryce Young more than anybody has. And Bryce Young, I have a feeling, as I've said before the season, if he holds the ball that low, Georgia will get at least one strip in this game. They could make the difference in the ball game. You have to give the advantage just slightly, ever so slightly, to Bryce Young. However, I grudgingly give that advantage to Alabama. So when you look at it, tight ends are the same, receivers go to Alabama, O-line goes to Georgia, running backs go to Georgia, quarterback, slight advantage to Alabama. The offenses are basically both good offenses. The biggest difference is Georgia's offensive line has been more productive than Alabama's offensive line. That's the biggest difference, and that's the damn big difference in a ball game. Defensively, both defensive lines have played well throughout the season. I went back today and I watched game film of both teams, and here is the big difference that I see. Alabama has good players. Will Anderson's a first-round draft pick guy, but it's not the elite, unbelievable special defense that they normally have. The front seven are good. They make plays. They're damn good against the run. Georgia will struggle to run the ball. If Georgia runs the ball easily against Alabama, the game will be over early. But I believe they'll struggle to run the football against Alabama. I think that they'll outnumber them in the box. And they're going to say, we're going to see if you can beat us one-on-one. And if they do, Georgia's receivers will beat Alabama's DBs one-on-one. Why? Because everybody else has, especially the slots. Because when you look at Alabama's nickels and their dimes and their strong safeties, they're just not very good in the corner in coverage, and the corners give up a lot of stuff. So when you compare, when you look at this, the defensive line is what dictates how long someone has to stay in coverage. Both defensive fronts are going to put pressure on the quarterback. Stetson Bennett does a good job of getting the ball away, not taking a sack. Bryce Young gets more pressure, has taken more sacks. Alabama's defensive front is really good. Their defensive line is really good, not the best in the world. Georgia's is the best in the world, maybe the best that's ever played. So who does the advantage go to? D-line has to go to Georgia. When I watch them, I shake a little bit. When I see Georgia's defense tackle, it hurts me. I played running back in high school and in college, and I still shiver when I see Georgia attack the ball. Georgia doesn't want to tackle you. They want to maim you because they can. When they finish a tackle, they finish the tackle to hurt you, which is what you're supposed to do. That's the game. But they can do it because they're so damn good. They're so physically talented and also well coached. D-line advantage goes to them. Linebacker advantage, same thing. Alabama's good. Georgia's phenomenal. Linebacker advantage goes to Georgia. Safety advantage, Alabama's good. Georgia, phenomenal. Advantage, Georgia. Corner and nickels, matchup guys that are going to play man. Alabama has struggled, and they've struggled getting lined up against tempo teams. The good thing for them is Georgia will tempo occasionally, but only for a play or two, and not to the extent that, like Tennessee, which is going to get some free, easy, cheap things. They might. And if Alabama was smart, they would tempo Georgia some. But that's just not their thing. It's not who they are, and it's hard to change that going in. So advantage on corners goes to Georgia. Every defensive position advantage goes to Georgia. But it's still not over yet. Let's go to head coach. Kirby Smart, Nick Saban. Greatest coach in the history of college football versus another one of his proteges. Jimbo was the first one to beat him this year, the first one of his former assistant coaches to come back and beat Nick Saban. First time it's ever been done. What does that mean for Kirby? I think that they're all good coaches. I think they all have good coaching staffs. I think that Kirby has a huge advantage in that he's got Will Muschamp on the staff. Will Muschamp, also Nick Saban disciple. Will Muschamp, two-time head coach. Even though he wasn't a good head coach or a great head coach, didn't win enough games to keep his jobs at either place at Florida or South Carolina, the fact that he's had to make decisions on the run time after time after time is a gigantic advantage to Kirby. To have Will Muschamp there on the sideline with a headset is huge for him. Huge. And Nick Saban has O'Brien, who also has been a head coach and was a successful head coach at Penn State, unsuccessful head coach in the NFL for the Texans. But you know who else was an unsuccessful NFL head coach? A guy named Nick Saban. So they both have really good coaching staffs. But if you have to decide, you always have to give the advantage to Nick Saban in this deal. However, I'm going to say this. The fact that Kirby Smart played the quarterback all year long without listening to the fan base, without listening to all the experts, and that he had enough guts to listen to Todd Monken and to let Todd Monken play aggressive offensive football, be an aggressive play caller, tells me that Kirby knows it's time. Just like Jim Harbaugh against Ohio State, he left nothing. He threw it all out there. He let Josh Gattis do his RPOs. He let him call the game, and wow, what a masterful game. Kirby's got Todd Monken, who is a phenomenal offensive football coach. He's done an incredible job all season. So has Bill O'Brien. And in my opinion, Pete Golding has done a good job. Anything you see defensively with Alabama, it's never just the D coordinator. It's always the D coordinator and Saban, because that's his thing. And the biggest issue that Alabama has had this year are DBs. And because of that, that's Nick Saban's specialty again. So when you want to blame Pete Golding, the DB guy is Nick Saban. He's still heavily involved with all that. It doesn't mean he's lost anything. It just means that they've struggled against tempo teams getting lined up. They've got misaligned a bunch of times. And so those issues probably won't be as relevant in this game because Georgia, even though they'll tempo occasionally, I don't think that they'll do it very much. So who does the advantage go to? I'm going to give it to Nick Saban because he's Nick Saban. Until it proves otherwise, even though he has been outcoached in a game this year against Texas A&M, and for almost four quarters, Auburn had the edge. But when you go back and look at that game, and everybody says Auburn kicked their ass, Auburn's players played their ass off, played hard, phenomenal, gave everything they had, did everything that you could do. But when you look at the numbers at the end of the game, it was basically double Alabama's numbers versus Auburn. But Alabama couldn't make any plays until the end of the game. And then they made a bunch of plays at the end of the game in order to be able to do it. Comparing the coordinators, offensive coordinator Bill O'Brien, Todd Monken, both really good. Both as good as there is in all the game. In all of college football, you can't find two better coordinators. Again, the third down percentage of both those guys, they got great players. When I was in the top 10 as a third down play caller. You know why I was? It's because I had great players. When I had great players, I was really good at third down. When I didn't have great players, wasn't very good at third down. So these guys both have good players, and they both do a really good job on third downs. So who is the advantage, O'Brien or Monken? I'm going to say flip a coin on it. I think they're both damn good, and honest to God, I can't pick one. Defensive coordinator, Pete Golden / Nick Saban versus Dan Lanning / Kirby Smart / Will Muschamp. Advantage. I'm going to give the advantage to Georgia. Why? Now, I'm talking about coaches. I'm not talking about players. Because they have three great minds together along with great players. Bill O'Brien in this game has got to scheme. He's going to have to scheme a run game. And you can do that. You can scheme a run game. But it's not something he's done all year long. You have to scheme it with what I call wrong way runs, where you can do some jet stuff with formations. O-line go one way, hand the ball off on the jet to a fast guy. Hope the DN buys it, block everybody on the perimeter, have a chance at a run game. Go to the Wildcat. Scramble out of a muddle huddle. Scramble. Go to the Wildcat with a receiver at quarterback. Get you a play out of that. If you don't have a running back, you still have to have a run game. You still have to force the run. Why? Because if all you do in this game is drop back and throw, Georgia will destroy you. They will eat you alive. You have to have the run game so that you can throw RPOs. It doesn't matter if you gain yards. Yeah, if you can gain yards, awesome. If Alabama rushes for 100 yards, they'll have a good shot at winning the game. I don't think they can, but I still think they need to run the ball 30 times. If they get 65 or 70 snaps in the game, they still need to run it 30 times because they can't drop back and throw it every play and win the game. Quarterback will get destroyed if they do that. So they've got to manufacture it. So with the defensive coordinator comparison, again, I'm going to go with Georgia because of the three-way defensive coordinator deal of Muschamp being there, Kirby being there, and Dan Lanning being a star. And not taking anything away from Pete Golding, because I think he's damn good. I went against him when he was at Texas San Antonio, and it was the best coach defense we played the entire season, the first year that I was at Middle Tennessee. Karma. Does karma matter? I think it does sometimes. I think that karma this year has played a role. I think the karma for the Auburn coach came back and bit him in the ass. I think that when you blame everybody but yourself and you fire a position coach early in the season the way that he did, and then when your players know they need to get vaccinated in order to, if nothing else, be able to stay and play the games in the season, which is a team thing, a camaraderie thing to do in order to be able to compete in the SEC, and their head coach won't say whether he did or whether he didn't. And most people believe that he didn't. I don't know. But I think that karma comes back and bites you in the ass. And I think it did. I think it bit the Auburn coach in the ass. I think that Nick Saban has had good karma because Nick Saban was adamant in being with his players during social unrest during George Floyd. He did public service announcements for COVID, for masking and vaccines. And so I think he's got good karma going. He's been a big donor in the Tuscaloosa community in lots of events. He seems to me like that as a human being, I don't know the guy, but I know the stories about him are much different than the stories that I heard 20 years ago about him. It seems like that, like a lot of us in life, is that maybe he's learned, which is what you do as a human, hopefully. You learn and you get better, hopefully. Some people learn and get worse. But it looks to me like that he's got some good karma with him. So is the karma with Nick Saban? I don't know if Kirby Smart did anything in either of those two situations to bring good karma to his side. I do know this. He's got a damn good football team. Is the karma such that it's just his time and that he'll beat his mentor? And is his talent so much better? He's done such an incredible job recruiting that this team can't be beat. He recruited a team that can't be beat. And the only way they could be beat is three turnovers. Three turnovers to zero, they lose the game. And they're the only team I know that's going to make the playoffs that could overcome three turnovers and still win a football game because their defense is so good. So where does the karma go? I'm going to give the karma to Alabama. I'm going to say that Alabama's got the karma on their side. And I know that everybody that hates Alabama doesn't want that. They want it to be, they've won enough, they get every call, they get everything in the world. Well, just remember, there's no saying the proof is in the printout. You look at the penalties this year called on Alabama versus called on Georgia, 2-1. Could be that Georgia's much better coached, more disciplined. Could be the officials have, you know, had a year against Alabama. Who knows? Could be either one of those things right now. So let's go to the next part. Motivation. Who is more motivated? Well, one thing is for sure. Alabama has had a reason to be motivated throughout the season because they've had really bad games. Sometimes you can be all the motivated you want in the world and you just ain't good enough. You can't tell me they weren't ready to play Auburn, even though they're already in the SEC championship game. They were ready to play Auburn. Auburn was ready to play Alabama. Auburn did a phenomenal job. They played hard. Derek Mason had a phenomenal scheme. Auburn was snake bit because they didn't have their starting quarterback, but they stayed in the game, had a chance to win, and then karma bit them in the ass. Motivation. If you're at Alabama, you know what the expectation is. You know. You know that this season, if you lose this game, that in the state of Alabama, you don't make the playoffs, that in the state of Alabama, they will consider it a failure. That's what the state will consider it. So you are motivated. If you play for Alabama, they're going to be ready. They're going to lay it all on the line. They're going to give everything they got. Georgia, on the other hand, do you think they're sick and tired of listening to you can't beat Alabama, Kirby can't beat Nick, you guys can't win a national championship, you hadn't won it in a million years? Oh my God, they are motivated as well. So, who's the most motivated? How's it going to work? What's going to happen? If Alabama's in the game after the half, and you get halfway through the third quarter and they're sitting right there and they're within three, or they're ahead by three, start to watch and see what happens. I think Georgia's in good shape because of Stetson Bennett. I think he'll make plays. I don't think he'll choke. I don't think it'll get to him. But I wonder about the coaching. I wonder if at that time does it start to get to Kirby that maybe he's never going to beat Nick, that this was his time. Or is he going to think, well, shit, you know, I'm going to get him in the playoffs now. We're going to let him in. I'm going to have to play him again. Going to get him in the playoffs. Maybe. I don't know. But I do know this. When you have something, you'll do more to not lose it than you will if you've never had something. A guy that lives in $1 million home certainly doesn't want to give it up. A guy that ain't never had one but's trying to get one, he's trying to get it, but probably not as hard as the guy that's in it that's trying not to give it up. So Alabama will be motivated to protect the crown, to have a great season again, to prove that they are the greatest of all time. Georgia, is motivated because, hey, it's why you play the game. And here they are with a chance to make history. And they have the better team. Simply put, Georgia has the best football team in the country, and there is no one else that is even close. I've watched Michigan all year long. I've seen every game. They're a good football team. I picked them to beat Ohio State. I knew that if Harbaugh relaxed, let those guys do their job, they were good enough to do it, and they did. I knew Georgia is a dominant football team. The only thing I was worried about was Kirby screwing it up, just like Harbaugh. Would he screw it up? And he didn't. He did a phenomenal job all season long, coaching, camaraderie, letting his offensive coordinator do his thing, not getting conservative during games, playing to win, not playing not to lose. And finally, will the crowd make any difference? Georgia fans will be crazy. Alabama fans will be crazy. Both fans will be crazy. And if it's a close game, whoever has the ball is going to have to deal with the crowd. It's not as big a problem as it used to be because of the hand clap. So, how's it going to end up when it's all over, said, and done with? When I went back today and I watched film, I went in with this purpose, this goal. When I went back in, my goal was to find a way for Alabama to win the game. Was to look at it objectively, look at the teams that they had played objectively. And my goal was to find a way for them to win the game. Now, I think that there are some things that give them an advantage. Watch this closely if you're going to be at the game where you can see this. Will Alabama get in bunch sets and stack sets with their wide receivers? That's an advantage if they'll do it because it's going to force one of Georgia's defenders when they're in man to be soft. They can get some easy quick game stuff if he will do it. They just haven't done it. They need to also, you need to see Bryce Young throw a minimal of 12 RPO screens and or slants in this game. Screens, slants, and little hitches. A minimal of 12. Really, I think 15 to 18. Call the run play, throw the ball. Call the run play, throw the ball. Call the run play, throw the ball. That's their best chance in order to be able to stay in the game early. I believe that Alabama has to go tempo some, which they've done occasionally, but just not much. Go tempo to get an advantage to try to manufacture a run game. Give them a formation, an unbalance, things that you're not used to doing because you don't have to do them because you're Alabama. When you're in my world and you've coached at the places I have, you're at Troy and you play Georgia and Florida and Arkansas as your money games in a season, you have to learn to do things that are crazy, outlandish, unbelievable. And that's what Alabama has to do in this game. They've got to steal some first downs. And to steal some first downs, you can't just say we're Alabama because you ain't good enough. Your O-line's not good enough. So you got to steal some. You got to do some things you haven't done all year. Bunch sets, RPOs, unbalanced, something strange and weird, even gimmicks, which they never do. Quarterback throwback versus man. Flea flicker wheel off of a motion play. You got to do something special to give yourself something easy because nothing's going to be easy. So that's what Alabama has to do to have a chance. Georgia has to play good, sound football. Run their system, run their plays. Stetson makes some plays on his own. He's going to get some pressure, make some plays. Don't take sacks. Don't turn the ball over. Don't throw interceptions. Don't fumble. That's what he's got to do in order to be able to do it. So, do I think Alabama will do this? Do I think that they'll build the gimmicks? Will they do the unbalanced? Will they throw 15 to 20 RPOs? Will they play some tempo? Will they realize they can't win unless they do? My answer is no. Why? Because people do what they do, especially when you're Nick Saban and especially when you're Bill O'Brien. You do what you do. You do what you know. And if they do that, especially in the dropback passing game, and they've got all these routes that are developing 15, 20 yards downfield, they could get run out of the deal. They could get blowed out. I don't think they'll make the adjustments. I don't think they'll make the changes. And so, therefore, the pick in the game is 28, Georgia. Alabama, 13. And just remember this. I went into today wanting to find a reason to pick Alabama. I wanted to pick Alabama. I wanted to pick the upset so I could look smart. And I couldn't make myself do it. I couldn't make myself do it. Now, I very easily could be dead wrong. We'll see. That's for sure. As the great Paul Feinbaum said on his radio show, we will find out on Saturday. Take care. Talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to today's show. One, go to coachtf.com/podcast and leave us your email so we can send you your free download for our Pigskin Pocket Card, which gives you 10 simple steps to follow daily to ensure an amazing life. Two, do something good today for someone who can never repay you, and you'll have truly lived an amazing life. 3. Join us Monday through Friday for new episodes and download any of our episodes wherever you get your podcast or simply download from our coachtf.com/podcast. 4. Give us a 5-star review today so we can continue to put together entertaining and informative episodes. Always remember, do good, no repay.